So today I want to tell you about the first time that I saw and played a video game. And it was one of those big old arcade style games that had been installed in the local laundromat sometime in the mid 1980s. And I remember standing in front of this glowing, chiming monolith of a machine that had just appeared in the corner next to the vending machine, which also ate quarters. And I felt something that I really didn't have a word for at the time, which I guess you could call wonder or some deep sense of excitement and curiosity. But there was also, I remember, this weird feeling that something about this video game in the laundromat was about to change everything. I mean, you could really feel it. So I was there with my cousin, and he had brought a stack of quarters with him. And I remember putting in that first quarter in the slot and feeling something happen. There was this, this little jolt of excitement when the screen lit up and the game started. And seeing that new digital reality appearing on the screen that you could actually interact with, that was rather hypnotic, to say the least. It was indeed an actual game changer, if you'll forgive the pun. So naturally, then I put in another quarter and another because, of course, I did. And I didn't know the word dopamine at the time, obviously, because I was 14 or whatever. But, in looking back, that laundromat machine, that was basically like the training wheel version of everything that came after it. That was the beginning, for me, anyway. Though I would suspect that was probably true for a lot of other Gen X kids at the time. So I think it's fair to say that this was the start of that whole loop of anticipation and reward that the entire tech industry eventually figured out how to deliver without even charging you the quarter. Humble beginnings, right? So, Generation X holds this rather unique position or distinction, I suppose, of being the final demographic to have spent an entire, mostly uninterrupted childhood in a purely analog world. And it's also the last generation to hold both of those worlds in significant actual memory in a way that other generations don't. I have very clear memories of leaving the house in the morning and being completely unreachable for the rest of the day, with no cell phone, of course, no way to be found or tracked. You were just gone. And that was a typical day in the 1980s. If you know, you know. Now, these days, they'd probably call that kind of thing a digital detox retreat. And it costs $600, and there's a facilitator, and he has a podcast. So, yeah, we were there before all of this. And I think that, when I think about it, I think that is a much weirder and it's a more loaded thing than I think most people give it credit for, including us, to be honest. Because when you consider that the digital revolution is arguably the most significant technological advancement in human history, you start to understand why this bridge that Gen X crossed was so life-altering, psychologically, culturally. I mean, pretty much in every conceivable way, really. Because there had never been such a huge, you know, such huge changes in such a short amount of time in human history. So, you know, it should come as no surprise why this has led to so much volatility and instability in our lives, and why we're dealing with the this rather dystopian situation that's gradually unfolding these days. So, before the laundromat video games and the quarters and any of that stuff, there was just the analog world. And I want to try to describe what that actually felt like, because I think it's getting harder to explain to people who didn't really live in it or who have almost no memory of it. I think it's a little like trying to explain or trying to describe a color that no longer exists. Okay, so back then, boredom was a little different. Not like the boredom of today as a clinical condition that requires immediate smartphone intervention. So boredom back then was just, that was just the default texture of a typical summer afternoon. So you'd finish whatever you were doing, and there was nothing next. There was no feed, there was no notification telling you what to pay attention to or distracting you. All there was the afternoon and the street outside and whatever you could make of that. And believe it or not, most of the time, the possibilities nonetheless seemed endless. Because I think because something invariably happened in that kind of boredom we had then. And it wasn't always something interesting, of course, because I will admit there were times where you just sit there and stare at things like some kind of psychopath. But most of the time, you'd build something, or you rode your bike somewhere new, or you started a conversation that went nowhere, but it still mattered anyways. You'd get yourself into trouble. You'd probably hurt yourself somehow. And as memory, you know, serves, I think there was some variation of all of those things that happened pretty much on a daily basis. So in a sense, I think the boredom was doing like structural work that, of course, nobody noticed it until it was gone. And another thing that was a lot different than it is now was privacy. Because back then, privacy was basically that was the default setting. So, you know, your location or your 2 a.m. thoughts or whatever, none of that was anyone's data. It just evaporated in the moment. So if you had a fight with someone, or you made some embarrassing mistake or did something stupid, it just stayed with the people who were there for it. It didn't get posted online and archived and, you know, occasionally resurface 5 years later at the worst possible moment. I have this memory of spending like entire summers in a state that I guess I can only describe as being off the grid. At least that's what it would look like to people nowadays. And it wasn't some wellness practice or, you know, some deliberate act of resistance or anything like that. You know, it wasn't some statement you were making. It was just, that was just what happened when you left the house with a dollar in your pocket, if you had a dollar, and you had your vaguely general intentions, whatever those were. And then, of course, there was the phone. Now, this was the kind of phone that was bolted to the kitchen wall like a warning. I mean, nobody back then expected you to be reachable through it 24/7. That idea would have seemed insane, which in retrospect, frankly, it still does seem insane when you really think about it. And then the digital technology started to arrive. And to be clear, Gen X didn't resist that. We didn't approach it with any caution or, you know, any of the apprehension that in retrospect might have been warranted. Oh no, we sprinted toward it. That's right. And, you know, we did this with the enthusiasm of people who understood exactly what it was replacing, because we'd actually lived in what it was replacing. I remember when the Atari gaming console arrived in our living room, like it was some kind of religious artifact or something. Let's just say the reverence around that box was palpable. And that first game cartridge we had, I think it was called Combat, which was pixelated and, you know, it was utterly primitive by any current standards. That thing felt like a portal to something that hadn't existed 5 minutes ago, which it was. And then eventually, the personal computer came along, which had this, I remember it had this particular smell that I can't quite describe. I guess if you were there and you had one, you probably know what I'm talking about. So the PC was like this warm plastic, very modern looking unit at the time. And it felt like, I don't know, possibility. I have this vague memory of the sound of the hard drive making, you know, whatever, doing whatever hard drives did back then. And it was like this, it sounded like this elaborate machine thinking. Like the machine was actually working something out that there was no way that you were going to be able to. Which, of course, you know, that was its own fascinating curiosity at the time. And then fast forward another 4 or 5 years, and the almighty internet arrives. Though, I should mention that back then, it came in the form of this painfully slow screaming dial-up process that worked through your phone line. And it took like, I don't know, 45 seconds to connect. So you couldn't use your phone, of course, when you were on the internet. And it had this sound of like, two fax machines that were having a domestic dispute or something. So you'd actually sit there and wait for it to connect, which now sounds inconceivable, of course, but at the time it felt completely reasonable because, well, I mean, what was on the other side of that 45 seconds was, as far as we understood, everything. And I guess so. Here's what I find interesting in looking back on all of this. Usually, it was us who ended up explaining all of this new computer tech, digital tech to our parents. So we were basically the early adopters, like evangelists or something. And it was us who forwarded those, if you remember, those silly chain emails, because we believed them. And we did this to ourselves with enthusiasm while paying for the privilege. All right, so here is what nobody really prepared us for. And I don't necessarily mean that as a complaint, because I don't think anyone could have prepared us for it, because almost nobody saw it coming, including most of the people who built the thing. What does it actually do to a person to have lived in two fundamentally different information environments where you carry both worlds at the same time in the same nervous system? That is the question. Because I think that is pretty much what Gen X is doing. Walking around with this disorienting dual consciousness that doesn't have a catchy name yet. I mean, we know what silence felt like before someone put it in an app and gave it a breathing exercise and then charged $11.99 a month for it. And I think, most of us remember what sustained attention felt like before it became a diagnosable condition with a prescription attached to it. I still clearly remember what it felt like to be bored without it causing like an immediate existential crisis. And the thing is, that knowledge, it's not exactly pleasant, because it's the discomfort of knowing what's missing, which is different from just missing something. This is the difference between losing your keys and knowing exactly where you left them, and watching someone else pick them up and walk away with them, and being told that's just progress. There is a researcher named Sherry Turkle who spent a good many years studying the effects of what constant connectivity actually does to human relationships and human attention. And her findings, more or less, revealed that the always connected life, it doesn't actually produce more connection. What it does produce is a type of loneliness that's it's a more difficult to define because it's surrounded by the appearance of connection. So you're never alone, but you're never quite together either, which I guess that's its own type of achievement. And I think Gen X feels this differently than younger generations for the reason that, well, I think the comparison point is a little more, for lack of a better word, tangible for us. We know what it felt like to be in a room with people and actually be fully present in that room. We remember what that was like before everyone was distracted by the dopamine activator in our pockets or on our wrists. You know, sometimes I really do miss the days before the smartphone on the table, sitting on the table, became like the uninvited guest at every single dinner or whatever. So I think there's something about carrying this comparison point that should be underscored, because this isn't nostalgia. That's a different thing. Nostalgia is like, that's a warm, soft, focused longing for something that you remember fondly. But what I'm describing, I'd say it's closer to something like testimony, where there's an experience of knowing with some precision what was there before and what replaced it, and what that replacement cost you. And I don't know, I think that's an odd thing to carry around, because you can't really share it with people who weren't there. I mean, you can try to describe things like the pre-digital boredom and the rotary phone on the wall, and I guess you know, the summers of being unreachable for 12 hours or whatever a day. And probably what's going to happen is people younger than us, they will in all likelihood nod politely and then just check their phones. And by the way, I don't mean that as a, to me, to be a criticism. It's just that I think this is what happens, again, when you try to describe a color that stopped existing before somebody was born. There's a French philosopher who I've mentioned many times because his work seems to come up in the things I talk about quite a bit. His name is Jean Baudrillard, and he wrote about this concept of the simulation that replaces the real in modern society. So, okay, imagine you have a map that gradually becomes more and more important than the actual territory it represents. It's something like that. And I think what happened is Gen X watched this whole thing unfold in real time. So we watched as the digital photograph of the experience gradually became more culturally significant than the experience itself. And the same thing happened with connection becoming content. And it also happened with presence becoming performance. And, you know, I think the frustration that comes from being a witness that nobody asked for, of knowing something changed and not being able to fully convince people who never knew the before that anything's actually missing. There's an exhaustion to that. And I think there's a sense of, you get the sense of generational alienation. That's what it feels like. A certain kind of alienation. I'd say, I mean, one way to look at it is it's kind of like being the only sober person at a party where everyone's having a great time. Technically, you have more information, right? But practically, nobody wants to hear it. And you're still stuck at the party. All right, well, I guess here's the reframe that I want to discuss. And the reason I think that this is worth making is because I don't want this, you know, what I'm saying here to land as just some extended complaint from a generation that peaked during the grunge era and hasn't quite gotten over it. I think the Gen X dual consciousness situation, it's burdensome, but it's also, you know, it's also a certain kind of knowledge that's becoming increasingly rare and also increasingly relevant. Because the thing is, the ability to compare is also the ability to evaluate. And, you know, that current arrangement, you know, the current arrangement, it's important to know that it isn't inevitable. Human beings functioned and connected and created and got profoundly bored and made something out of it without any of this infrastructure. And that's not a small thing. I actually see that as empirical evidence that another way of being is possible because it existed and some of us were actually in it. And I think that's part of what's driving this whole neo-Luddite thing that's happening now. You know, I get this impression that there's this general vibe out there right now of people trying to, like, claw back something that they sense they've lost. They're pointing at a, like a before. Gen X actually lived it, which makes us, like, we are reluctant expert witnesses rather than, you know, nostalgic complainers or something. Nobody asked us to testify. We just happened to have been there. And there is something else that I think is worth saying here. The fact that we ran toward that technology and that we were the ones who adopted it and evangelized it, I guess, and, you know, we had to explain it to our parents. I don't think that's hypocrisy. I think that's just what happens when something extraordinary arrives and you don't know yet what the real cost will be. So you enthusiastically say yes, and then you spend the next 30 or so years trying to figure out what you agreed to. Which honestly, thinking about it, that describes most of the major decisions of adulthood, doesn't it? So I guess we're at least consistent. So in case you haven't noticed, Gen X is, we're aging, we're getting older now, which is a sentence that catches me slightly off guard when I think about it, even though the math is not ambiguous. And yes, there's a standard of existential weight that comes with that. You know, the mortality and the time passing stuff, and of course the looking in the mirror stuff, and your body kind of falling apart stuff. And, you know, I don't need to elaborate on that, because if you are Gen X, well, then you already know exactly what I'm talking about. And if you're not, if you're of the younger generation, well, then you'll find out eventually. But there is something additional that I don't think gets very much acknowledgement. Generation X is the first generation to age into old age while carrying this idiosyncratic double memory. So we have the standard human reckoning with time and mortality and all that, as I said, of course. But we also have the grief of watching an entire world basically get replaced within a single lifetime. And that is actually a lot to process. And most of the Gen X demographic are processing this while they're still trying to raise kids and take care of their aging parents, while trying not to drown in the current meltdown of society. So I guess the thing that I find myself pondering more lately is that the living memory of the before, it's finite. And it's stored in people. And, well, people, as it turns out, as you well know, have a limited run. So when Gen X goes, the firsthand testimony goes with it. And then at that point, you know, what remains after that is reconstruction. It's what goes in the history books, which will eventually consist of someone else's interpretation of what it was like to stand in the laundromat in 1984 and feel the world rearrange itself around a glowing Space Invaders arcade game. So, I don't know, maybe that's worth something, and I don't mean in a precious way or anything like that. You know, I'm not trying to imply we're special snowflakes or anything. I think it just means something in the way that any firsthand account of something that no longer exists is worth something. I mean, we were there, and we remember. And at least for the time being, most of us are still here to say so, which feels, I guess it feels like it should mean more than it probably does. But, oh well, whatever, never mind. All right, well, that's all I've got today on Gen X. Maybe I'll talk more about that in the future. And thanks so much for watching.